Yes, Watershed was very exciting. It was commissioned for the festival. I was appointed historical consultant. I worked with the likes of Neil Armfield, who was the director, Alana Valentine and Christos Chalkas, who were the librettists, and Joe Twist, the composer. And it was a sold-out event, which was very exciting. The Australian said it was a masterpiece, which was extraordinary, got wonderful reviews, and I think something that will be, I hope, forever a memory of Dr. Duncan and what happened to him. And to remind ourselves that something like this hopefully won't happen again.
Mm. Christos Chalkas described the death of Dr. Duncan, your work, as a scrupulously researched history that maintains the enthralling narrative drive of the best crime fiction, and it packs a powerful punch. It's like walking through an exhibition, because not only do you have that incredible historical detail, but you have clippings from newspapers and witness accounts and documents from courts and photographs from newspapers. There is a world. It's an exhibition as well as a history, isn't it, Tim?
It is. What I was trying to achieve, because it is, I mean, I wrote my honours thesis on Duncan in 92, so he's been in my life on and off for 30 years, and it seemed important when I first approached the publisher that we have not just the writing, and writing that was easy to understand. I didn't want to write an academic book with footnotes. I wanted it to be accessible to readers. But we've got the photos of all the lawyers, of the vice squad officers who were linked with the affair, the senior police, the witnesses. We've got photos from 1972 through 50 years to 2022. So it does give a good, I think, visual idea of the case, which I hope works well with the writing, so that the reader can really appreciate the complexity of what's happened over that period.
Many homosexual men, as we referred to gay men in the early 70s, were bashed or killed in many different parts of the world. Why did the death of Dr. Duncan, why did it have such an impact?
It was one of those, it was reported very quickly. So, he'd only been in Adelaide for 7 weeks. He'd arrived from Britain. He was an orphan. He had no family or friends, but he was an academic. And back then in 72, academics were very highly respected in the community. I make the point that it's possible that if he'd been a working-class man, that the case may not have gained the traction he did. But when he did die, the University of Adelaide, his employer, really stepped in to and acted in a way to bring the case to public attention. And very quickly, the reporting revealed that three vice squad officers who were in the area at the time had been questioned by police. And when that hit the news, which, as I said, was very quickly soon after, that caused quite a ruckus. And Horst Lucky, who was Duncan's professor, the head of the department, actually wrote to the police commissioner and asked him, what steps are you taking to reassure the public of the integrity of the police force? And that was very bold and very provocative. And in fact, soon after that, the Attorney General called for a report and then actually asked that a coroner's inquest be held.
Before we talk much more about the crime itself, because that is well documented, let's talk about what happened after the event. A private member's bill leading the way in law reform. Most importantly, you wrote, it ensured that homosexuality was removed to the private sphere and out of the public eye. So there's a lot of layers to this case and the impact it had on law reform, isn't there?
It's an extraordinary case. As I said, I've been writing about it for 30 years and it still fascinates me that you have this situation where within 7 weeks of Duncan dying, a conservative member of one of the most conservative upper houses in Australia, this is the Legislative Council in South Australia, a man called Murray Hill, came forward and he was a decent and honourable man, and he was horrified about what had happened. And he announced that he would introduce, which he did within 11 weeks, the first bill in Australia. It was a private member's bill, so it didn't have the backing of his party, a private member's bill to decriminalise male homosexual acts. And you have to remember that Duncan had come from Britain where male homosexual acts had been decriminalised and had come to Australia where not a single state or territory had actually embraced that legislative change. And so that was the beginning of a three-year process. That first bill, unfortunately, was heavily amended. There was another bill in 73, and then in 75 we got this extraordinary trailblazing law which did lead the English-speaking world.
As a young person in the 70s, I thought South Australia was incredibly groovy, Tim. And Don Dunstan as Premier had a certain charisma, and there seemed to be a progressive, arts-loving kind of space. Are you old enough to have remembered what it was like in the 70s in South Australia?
I was a bit young myself, but it's true, this period, in fact, all three bills were introduced, although I should point out they were introduced as private members' bills. Mm-hmm. None of them were introduced with the backing of government. But yes, you have to remember that Dunstan himself actually had, in fact, Dr. Duncan was nearly written out of history because in 1965, Don Dunstan had just been appointed Attorney General and he went to the Cabinet, Labor Cabinet, and they agreed to actually bring a bill forward, but it was blocked by the Labor caucus. So it fails in 65, but you can see Dunstan there behind the scenes, even though the second and third bills, which were introduced by a Labor member, even though they were private members' bills, you can see that in the lower house that the Labor Party controlled, that all the Labor members are supporting it, and you can see Dunstan behind the stage, behind the scenes there, making sure and trying to support as much as possible this bill, which he'd actually tried to introduce in 65.
If it has a hint of police involvement, does the unresolved nature of this crime have a greater impact on the community?
I think you have to remember in relation to this case that those three vice squad officers who were originally linked with the affair, in 85 there was another vice squad officer who came forward with claims of a police cover-up, and in fact it led to the case being reopened because no one had been charged back in 72. And so those three vice squad officers were eventually all charged with his manslaughter. One, there was found to be insufficient evidence and he wasn't brought to trial. The other two were, and they were acquitted of his killing. But there's no question that it's now, this year is the 50th anniversary. And if you ask most people who know about the Duncan case, even though the two vice squad officers were acquitted, the other one wasn't brought to trial, there's still the odour of police involvement in Duncan's killing, and it does leave a nasty taste in one's mouth.
How do you feel as we approach the 50th anniversary of Dr. Duncan, who I always thought was George Duncan, but is George Ian Ogilvy, but went by Ian, didn't he?
Yeah, George Ian Ogilvy, and he was known at his mother's insistence that he'd be called Ian from an early age. So don't worry, there's a lot of people who didn't realise that, and that's one of the things that I hope the book will bring to the public's attention.
Indeed.
What's been achieved? Well, it's interesting. It was actually, I was interviewed by David Marr for a session at Adelaide Writers Week just a couple of weeks ago, and it was a question that came up, and you think, well, yes, in 1975 we got this extraordinary law. It led the English-speaking world, and Tasmania, of course, took another 22 years. That was the last jurisdiction in 1997. And you think that we've come so far, but I answered that question, and my response was, well, you look at same-sex marriage and the vote that we had for that, and there was 38% of Australians who actually voted against it. And, you know, that is a substantial number of people who were happy to vote that, you know, homosexuals, I mean, I'm talking more broadly here about the rainbow community, that, you know, we're second-class citizens. And so I think a lot has been achieved, but I think we still have a lot more to do to be welcomed and embraced by society.
Tim, it's become a watershed oratorio. You will be speaking to it a lot. I'm sure it'll be a crime documentary at some point. Who else is responding to your work?
Well, actually, you've mentioned the crime documentary, and I'm actually, yes, trying to get a producer interested in doing precisely that thing. The book's only just come out about 6 weeks ago, and we're already arranging events for the 10th of May, which is going to be the exact 50th anniversary of his death. Various people are doing a series of events to commemorate his death. I think it's great that the community is becoming, the LGBTIQA plus community is becoming involved in a range of ways and is commemorating his awful death. But I wider society too. There were hundreds of people at Writers Week. It was a wonderful turnout, and it's still, for many people, as the book says, it really is one of Australia's most notorious unsolved murders, and it is a stain on our state's history.
Well, thank you for putting so much to write, Tim Reeves. It's been lovely to chat.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.